Hello, everyone. Welcome to yet another episode of The Police and the People. We are at episode 13. 1-3, Josh.
We're lucky, just, lucky.
We're
number
just
13.
Turning these things out like Japanese cars. You know what I mean? How you doing, man?
Good. It's funny. A guy that I've met through that program, Leadership Seacoast, that we discussed in the past.
Right.
He does a podcast. And approached me about us coming on his podcast and him coming on our podcast. And he was saying how impressed he was with how professional they sound and how frequently we are pumping them out, because he does one every so often,
right?
Where we are putting them out every other week, every third week, so on and so forth. So that made me feel good that a guy that, and he's in production. That's his thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yep. Well, I've also, on that same vein, I've talked to this guy. I'm sorry, I don't remember his name right now. It's Patrick something, but he does a podcast called CJ Evolution.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Criminal Justice Evolution. Yeah. It's very good. He has outstanding guests on his show, and he's just a one-person show. He doesn't have a partner that works with him. But he has a lot of guests on, and he also does a Motivational Monday. Is that what it is? They're only about 4 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really like him. So he and I, we talked on the phone the other day, and we're also going to do the same thing.
He's
going to call in and be on our show. We're also going to be on his show.
Crossovers.
So, crossovers, man. Yeah. That's what it is. It's all about sharing in this community, right?
Yep.
And with us, as always, our producer extraordinaire, Lucas Jones. How you doing, Lucas?
Doing well.
Yeah. Lucas is home from college, and he's back grinding the work scene as a waiter for the Outback.
Serving
those blooming onions.
Colossal blooming onions.
You're going to be looking back on...
Colossal blooming onions.
You're going to look back on these days, Lucas, and say, that was one of the greatest days of my life. Yeah. I'm not kidding you. You're going to look back on your summer jobs in college and just say, I didn't have a care in the world.
Exactly.
Just having a good time.
Yep.
Live it up while you can. Trust me.
What's the biggest tip you've received?
Biggest tip?
Yeah.
Money-wise, not like tips.
Over winter break, I actually had this couple that I consider my regulars only because they asked for me a couple times, but they tipped me 50%.
50%? That's pretty good. Yeah, what's the smallest you've ever seen?
Yeah, but the bill was only $7.
they just had a blooming onion. And that was it.
Smallest, like 10%.
10%. All right. Cool. No one didn't leave you just some change, like coins.
I haven't gotten that yet. Not yet. We'll see.
All right. So on today's show, we are going to finally get back to answering questions. We have a few questions, write-in questions. We're going to give, well, I wouldn't necessarily call them answers, more like responses.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And you guys are going to love this. You're in for a treat. We have another What's Bugging Josh segment.
Yeah.
What's pissing him off today?
Lots of things. But we'll keep it to one topic today.
All right, but first, let's talk about why we do what we do. We do this podcast, one part of it is because we want to share our experiences with everyone, and we also want to unite people with the police officers that serve their community. And we do that through introducing perspectives, you know, answering the questions, why police do what they do, and just, again, mostly to help bridge a gap. We also do this because we want to basically market our company. Josh and I own a law enforcement training company. And what we want to do with that company is enhance the careers of the people who attend our training. We want them to leave there with nuggets of knowledge that are going to make their lives easier, and information they can pass on to people that work for them or they work with, to help them out as well. You know, we have to share information, and that's exactly what we want to do. Now, the how that we do that is we reach out to police departments. Right now it's just in New England, but that's starting to expand. And we ask them to host our training, and we offer very competitive hosting packages for police departments that do host our training. And what is it that we offer, Josh? What do we have coming up this fall?
Well, it's funny, to kind of back up a little bit, you said you know, we reach out to departments to host. This fall, I would say 90% of our trainings were departments that host that reached out to us saying, we want to host or I want to host one of your classes.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's good to hear.
It is good
that,
to hear.
That departments are starting to recognize and starting to value what we do.
Right.
And it just was an interesting dynamic. I found myself spending more time telling departments, okay, but you're going to have to wait because there's two or three departments ahead of you already to either host that class or during that time frame. So just to kind of give you a quick outline of what we have coming up, June of 19, we have field training officer. That's going to be in Saco, Maine.
Late June.
Yep. That's the second or last week of June. That's one of our most popular classes. So
only a few spots left, by the way.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It's if you're interested in it, that's a class you want to get on quickly. And that's really because we have the guy that, in my opinion, is the rock star of field training nationally, mm-hmm. and that's Phil White from the San Jose Field Training Academy that is going to be running that class. Then we get into the fall, and in September, we're going to be having a fantastic class, a 911 homicide analysis, and that'll be going in Massachusetts. We're going to be bringing in Tracy Harpster, who's a retired officer out of Ohio, and he is kind of the guy on this as well. He's a published author. He did his master's thesis on being able to determine if the person that called 911 to report a murder is the person that committed the murder.
Killer. Right. Yeah. And well, that's what it's called, right? Is the caller the killer?
Is the caller the killer, right. And he has consulted on over 700 homicide investigations.
Cold case.
He's analyzed over 1,500 911 calls. I mean, this guy is the man on that subject. And this is the first time he's ever come north of New York City to teach this. So if you're somebody that does do homicide investigations, if that's part of your responsibilities, that's a class you're going to want to get to. And it's not just for cops. It's for dispatchers.
Especially dispatchers. Yeah. Yes.
Dispatchers, yeah. Medical examiners, prosecutors, anybody that's in that field. So that's an exciting class. We have constitutional liability coming up in Westbrook, Maine in September. Again, that's a class that has gotten rave reviews in the past.
Right.
That's for supervisors, understanding some of the liabilities involved at the federal level with our job. Then in October, we have leadership coming up again in Kennebunk, Maine. That's kind of the flagship training of our company. And we also have interview and interrogation. We're going to be having another field training officer class. Mm-hmm. That's going to be in Rowley, Massachusetts.
Yep,
which again is going to be a great class. They have a brand new training room, so we're excited to be there. November, we're going to be running our working, controlling, and managing major investigations. That's in Topsham, Maine. That we're really excited about that. And then we have a couple of other programs, I guess you could say, that we're starting to build. We're going to be launching a crime scene and forensics program where there will be multiple classes that you can take over a several-month period,
right.
Almost like an academy, almost like a forensics academy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you also get a very nice kit that goes along with it at cost. And it's not just one that Sergi or anyone else is just trying to sell you. It's actually the instructor handpick the items that you will need that goes in this kit.
Right. So it's a crime scene kit that is created by a crime scene technician, by somebody who knows exactly what you need.
Right.
And the other nice part about that, if you look at the curriculum, there's very, very little classroom time. It's mostly working mock crime scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So you're using the tools that you're going to get at this training. So we have that. And then, of course, we have our digital forensics and social media trainings that are going to be coming up. There's going to be one in Hanover, New Hampshire in November.
Right.
And then towards the end of 19 and the beginning of 20, we're going to be launching an advanced digital forensics class.
Very excited about that one.
Yeah, that's going to be a great class.
Yeah.
So we got a lot going on. We've got a ton of trainings coming up. The toughest thing is just managing all the schedules, to be honest with you. That's really been the biggest challenge.
That is one of the toughest parts, right. Yes. And then me, when this really kicks off, all of the registrations that come in and invoicing and all of that. So, yep. Yes, it's going to get quite busy starting in right. probably August.
Yeah, and those are the classes that we know about. When we right. start getting the quick requests saying, hey, can you get out here? You know, we need you in 2 or 3 weeks. That we got to find ways to fit that in.
Keep our fingers crossed about the
New Hampshire Police Academy.
Police Academy contracts that we put in for. So, sure. Yeah, it could get it could ramp up here pretty quickly.
Yeah.
All right. All right, guys, let's get on with the show. All right, everyone, here we go. As I said at the beginning, we're going to do some questions. We're going to get to those. We have four we're going to go over today. And again, we're not necessarily going to maybe answer them, as mostly just respond to them and just give some opinions. So I'm going to kick it off with question one here. So my son is a junior in high school, and he's been talking about wanting to become a police officer. Well, good for him. Very good. What does he need to do to prepare? He thinks he does not need to go to college to become a police officer. Is that true? Well, my first response is stay the hell out of trouble. All right? Because if you go through all of this trouble, going to college, getting a CJ degree, all of that, and then they do a background on you and they find out you're a drug user, or you committed a burglary, or you can't not get speeding tickets, et cetera, you're not going to get the job. So it was all in vain.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing. And that is one of the biggest challenges that I have found when I was a police officer, and especially when I was doing backgrounds. We would go through, we would probably, if I could give it a ratio, every 3 to 4 people that went through the background, maybe 3 washouts to 1 hire, maybe 4.
Yeah, I would say it's an incredibly high amount of candidates that are getting washed out today.
Yep.
And a lot of it is drug use, drug as use. We know.
In college.
Yeah.
Adderall. Did Adderall when I was in college.
Yep.
Yeah, well, guess what?
Yep. And now you're either completely disqualified, or at least you're disqualified for, depending on the state, a certain state might say you're disqualified for a year. A certain
right, depending state, on the academy post standards. Yeah,
could be 5 years. And there are probably some states out there that don't have a problem with it, but I know most states in New England will make you wait a little while before you become a police officer.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would agree. It's the first step is, you don't have to be an angel.
No.
But you can't be out committing crimes.
No.
I heard a police chief one time say, if you started preparing to be a police officer 6 months ago, you might be too late.
Yeah.
Right?
That's so
you
true.
Might be too late.
Yeah. Very true.
I can remember a person in a background saying, oh, it's a lifelong dream of mine to be a police officer. And then we found out they were smoking marijuana every single day in college. And I was saying, okay, that's not experimentation,
no.
right? That's you were a drug user in college knowing that you wanted to be a police officer someday. That's going
right.
to hurt you.
And you should have known that this could be an issue
right.
down the road.
Right.
We should have known anyway.
Yeah.
All right, so the second part of the question asks, does he need to go to college to become a police officer? Or he doesn't think he needs to. Well, that's kind of a it depends question. One, it depends on each agency. Right. Every agency is different. Some agencies do require a college degree. Here in New Hampshire, I think state police require at least an associate's.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but you make a good point. There are
right.
Even if it's not official, there's a lot of kind of an unofficial policy is that everybody
correct.
Will have
right.
at least an associate's degree in some departments.
I think at one time, I don't know if it still holds true, but it was Concord PD required mm-hmm. a degree to work there. So it depends on the agency you're going for. I think most of them don't require it.
Yep.
However, I can tell you, as a person who was involved with the hiring process at my agency for many years, most people do.
It's certainly not going to
degree.
It's certainly not going to hurt you. Right. So it's not going to hurt you.
It kind of makes you more competitive, or at least if you want to be in the market, it does help. I'll tell you another way that it helps, which I think has far more weight than just having a degree. If you're going to be a police officer, I do recommend having a criminal justice degree. And I'm just going to tell you this from my experience. When I went into law enforcement, I had an associate's in criminal justice. And when I went to the academy, when we sat down and talked about criminal law, constitutional law, all of these issues, I knew exactly what they were talking about. It was nothing new to me. And they kind of expanded more on the state side of it instead of the federal side of it, which is where colleges usually kind of hang out, more on the federal side of constitutional law. But I felt so comfortable and so at home because I had this background information going into it. So I think it helped me in that respect. Another thing about college is you have to write papers. Right, Josh?
Correct.
You're an instructor, a professor at a college for master's level. You have to write papers. Guess what? When you're a police officer, you have to write reports, okay?
Lots of papers.
Lots of reports. So if you have a decent grasp on the English language, grammar, et cetera, how to structure sentences, how to tie together paragraphs, you're way ahead of the game. So you can see how college is very beneficial in that respect, okay? And we also said also that it helps you be more competitive. Go ahead.
I'm going to disagree with you.
Okay.
Not to go to college. I agree. For all those reasons, writing reports, attention to data and information, and being able to translate that into a written report, so on and so forth. But I don't see any problem with not having a criminal justice degree.
I'm not saying that there's a problem with it. I'm just saying it helped me.
Well, I encourage people to major in what you're interested in.
Yeah.
If you're interested in criminal justice, major in it. If you're interested in something else, then that should be your major. And the reason is there's nothing wrong with being a well-rounded police officer that has other interests. I had no criminal justice degree when I became a police officer. My undergraduate degree was not in a criminal justice field. Now, where you bring up at the police academy, I'm going to agree with you there. That gives you a big leg up when you are studying theories and rules and regulations, policies, practices.
Mens rea, actus reus, all of these terms that get thrown out. Yeah.
But you went to get your associate's degree from the same college where the police academy was held. Do you think that helped? Because probably a lot of the curriculum at the police academy, because it was affiliated with that college, do you think that helped you?
Yeah, it's a good question. I never made that connection. I don't know. Maybe.
I love throwing the curveball at Tim. You see his face right now, Lucas?
He gets all wrinkled up.
He's like, crap. You don't like it when a Polish guy calls you out, do you?
Well, first of all, let's put this into perspective. That was in 1996. So you're asking me to remember curriculum for 96? You're nuts. All right. I certainly, I don't want everyone thinking that you should. You have to be a CJ major or at least a criminal or a justice studies major. Mm-hmm. You don't. Absolutely not. My one of my best colleagues where I worked was an accountant.
Right.
You know, and it helped him, especially when he became an administrator.
Right.
You know, certainly with budgets and such. But that's just the advantage it gave me. Yeah. So another thing that I do recommend, and it's kind of along the same vein, is maybe a little bit of time in the military. All right. Now, I know that's kind of a touchy subject since we are technically still at war in Iraq.
Sure.
And there's hostilities elsewhere. And I know that President Trump has just pledged 1,500 troops to go in the region of Iran. So, you know, maybe pick the branch, you know, that would probably help you the best.
Or that suits your personality.
Suits your personality. But here's what it does. Number one, we talked about college. You can get your college paid for by going to the military.
Right.
A couple of ways. The GI Bill now is so much better than it was when I was in. And the GI Bill paid for my associate's degree. So no complaints there. But it's even better now. I think they pay your rent and also pay for your college. Yeah,
you know, I've even heard of some folks that were getting paid a stipend. They were being paid to go to college.
Right. So the post 911 GI Bill is so much better than the one that I had. But even still, I'm not complaining. Number two, when you're in the military and you are going to school, they will pay a large portion of your tuition, maybe even 100%. Now, when I was in, they paid 75% of your tuition without touching your GI Bill. So if you can maybe get your associates or get your undergraduate paid for while you're in the military, and then now you've got this sweet GI Bill to work on your master's.
Right.
You know, so for free. And it's very little pay-in for those of you who, there is some buy-in to the GI Bill. When I was in, and this was, again, a long time ago, you paid $100 a month for a year, which is $1,200, and it got me $17,000
back
for college. Yep. Yeah, so I think that was a huge return on investment. Yep.
But just like anything in either the military or police work, you shouldn't be joining just to get college paid for.
No, you
shouldn't become a cop just because you say it's going to be neat to wear the uniform and to, you know, to get this and to get that.
You have to embrace military life or you are going to be miserable.
Right. Just like police work. If you're doing it to get the perks or benefits, you're going to be disappointed.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. So just know that, you know, when you enlist in the military, they're going to tell you when to eat. They're going to tell you when to go to bed. They're going to tell you when to poop, when to pee, especially when you're in boot camp.
And your heart has to be in the right place. You have to be doing it for the right reasons.
That's correct.
For service.
That's correct. All right. So to kind of sum that up, you don't have to have college, but it's highly recommended. Mm-hmm. We recommend maybe exploring, looking into some military service, not only to serve your country, but also on the back end, you may be able to pay for this college that's going to help you with police work. And also, police work is paramilitary anyway. Right. So you're going to feel comfortable going into that environment where it's structured. I will say this was the biggest perk of going into police work after military work was after 40 hours, they paid me time and a half. When I was in the military, that didn't exist. So
yeah,
that was a big perk.
And you got to be doing something. If you're applying for a job as a police officer and they ask you, you know, what were you doing a month ago? I was sitting on the couch playing video games. You're probably going to be out. You have to show that you are doing something. You've invested some of yourself into preparing for a career in law enforcement.
That's correct. And that is a good way to do it.
Yep.
All right. Question two. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah. Question two is, I see police officers working at road construction sites, directing traffic, et cetera. Some are jacked. And some, well, let's just say they've eaten too many donuts.
Mm.
Aren't there standards for fitness when you are a police officer?
Hmm.
Good question. And if that caller is out there or that the person who submitted, I think they spelled donuts wrong, just FYI.
Well, that's the way Dunkin' Donuts spells.
Oh, okay. So what do you think, Tim?
Well, you know me, man.
I was going to say, you are passionate about this.
I am passionate about this. I want police officers to be in shape for a variety of reasons. One, just for their overall health, to be there for their families, et cetera. And two, to be able to handle the shit that gets thrown at you on this job. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. And yes, I do mean sometimes you have to deal with combative people. You may have to chase people, but also the stress.
Yeah.
Also the shift work. Working out and keeping yourself healthy tremendously helps your body deal with what you have to go through in police work. So, yeah, I am a huge advocate. And if you follow me on Instagram, you're going to see I put out a lot of motivational memes and posters and such because I want you out there in the gym. But the question said, aren't there fitness standards for police officers?
It depends.
It depends.
Right. Depends on what state, depends what department.
On your state, department, et cetera, et cetera.
Have you been grandfathered? Some officers, because they've been police officers for so long, they've been grandfathered. There's all kinds of stuff.
There is. I can only speak to New Hampshire. And in 2001, the state of New Hampshire required that police officers take a physical agility test every 3 years. And it is the minimum 35 percentile standards, Cooper standards. And I was at one time, I ran my department's side of the house that took care of that we mm-hmm. tested personnel. And, you know, I will say when it came out, I was happy. Glad to see that there were some sort of standards put in place. If it were me, I would require it every year, not mm-hmm. every 3 years, because you see people start to get in shape.
Yeah, 6 months before their test.
And then for 3 years, they backslide all the way down again, right?
Yep.
So, you know, I think every year would be a better standard. I think it should have been across the board. I know that there were probably some legal issues. They couldn't do it for everyone. They had to set a date and grandfather. I was grandfathered when he came in. But I would take the test with people. If I had the time to do it, I would go out there and test with them. So that's my take. What do you think, man?
Yeah, I agree. I think there should be standards. I think they should be frequent. The thing I would add is I think departments should embrace providing their officers with the ability to prepare.
Yes.
So you see so many departments that they don't have a fitness room, and if they do, it's really not up to snuff. They don't provide the time to their officers to prepare for these tests. So that's the thing that I always, you know, it comes into my mind is if you're going to require officers to meet a certain fitness level, and you should for all of the reasons we just said,
right,
not just so they look great, but so that they are healthy,
mm-hmm.
You need to provide them with the tools to do that.
Correct.
We don't ask officers to, you know, to become proficient with a firearm on their own. That is monitored. There's a certain place they go to do that. There's a certain format. There's training,
mm-hmm.
so on and so forth. The same thing with how to handcuff people. The same thing with how to write reports. There's a standard. If it's not up to snuff, somebody sits down and shows you
right.
how to do it. I think we should apply that same principle, that we should apply those same principles to physical fitness.
Yes. Yes.
So that's, but I do, I agree. It's not 1950 anymore where every cop eats donuts, drinks coffee, chain smokes, you know, so on and so forth. It's a it's a profession now.
It is. Absolutely. That's a good way to put it. And part of the problem, which maybe problem's not the right way to put it, but with a little preparation, you can overcome this. But many times police officers feel that the only food that they have to eat is what's available to them in restaurants. And that's just not true. You can bring food. My last, I don't know, 7 or 8 years as a police officer, I always brought in my food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every once in a while, I'd go out with friends and grab a steak tip salad or something at the local sub shop. But you can overcome it if you're just willing to prepare and put in the work. You don't have to go out and eat pizza every night and eat the sub with all the bread and the French fries and all that. You don't have to. So that's something to think about as well. It just takes a little bit of preparation.
It's a challenge.
It is.
But
it is.
I agree.
You can overcome it.
Sure.
I will say that there is a trend that I've noticed. I am new to Instagram. I am 51 years old, and I am I didn't grow up in the world of social media, so I'm kind of an outsider looking in. But I'm trying to, you know, expand our brand, the company's brand, on Instagram. And so I look at a lot of the police-oriented type hashtags and such, and other people's, what would you call it, Lucas? Their
activity?
Their Instagram accounts. I'm sorry, that's what I guess I'm looking for, their accounts. And what I'm seeing is it's a double-edged sword. I'm seeing a lot of damn selfies out there of cops in a patrol car taking pictures of themselves and putting it up and looking all pretty. And I'm talking about guys here, too, with their nice trimmed beards and, you know, and their one thing about them is they are all muscular. They're all big guys and very fit. But they take in their sleeves and shorten them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you show off that bicep. Maybe even cut off the blood a little bit so that vein sticks out just a little bit more, right? And I'm thinking, you vain bastard. You know, come on. What are you doing? But then at the same time, I go, look, this guy is definitely fit. You know, he's definitely working out, and he's a good example for other officers.
Yeah, you can't tell people to get into shape and then tell them, but don't
show it off.
Don't be proud of it. Right.
Yeah. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around it because I never would. But I didn't have cell phones when I was a patrol officer either, so I couldn't have taken a selfie. So what do I know?
You don't have those biceps, Tim.
I do not. I got olive oil arms, not Popeye arms. All right, question three. My daughter has always wanted to be a police officer. What advice would you give her? And what is it like for females in law enforcement agencies?
And once again, I think it's going to depend on your organization. If it's just like every job out there, there are challenges for females, right? It's you know, this is not my quote, but it's a man's world. You know, that's what you kind of hear.
It's a male-dominated industry, that's
right,
for sure.
Right. Yeah. So if it's a police department that embraces diversity, and I don't just mean racial diversity, I mean gender diversity, and recognizes that that's a good thing, then I think as a female you'll be more comfortable. And I can only assume that because obviously I've never experienced it personally. But as you said, it is a male-dominant profession still. So it's got to be terribly difficult, I would assume, for a female to get comfortable in law enforcement. And something else that I've noticed is if you are a female police officer, usually your relationships are with other police officers or firefighters or people in the military. And that's just something I've noticed. And again, I think that's probably a challenge because if we'll say you are a female that has a male partner, intimate partner, you know, your husband, boyfriend, mm-hmm. so on and so forth. If your male partner is a banker or works in IT or is a teacher, I'm betting that can be a weird dynamic for the female to be the alpha dog because she's a police officer. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's right. It's an unfortunate symptom of our society.
Right.
But I'll bet you that's a challenge in some relationships. And again, I've never experienced it, so I can't tell you. But
the psychology of it.
Yeah. And we need to get around that. We need to continue to move forward and break those stereotypes. But I'll bet you that's a difficult thing if you're a female officer. Yeah. So you end up getting involved with other police officers, whether you're in a heterosexual or same-sex relationship, or firefighters, because that's still an emergency service, kind of an alpha dog, very similar, or military, because again, it's that alpha dog, service to people, so on and so forth. So when I've seen female officers that are married either to men or women, that's usually, or dating men or women, their partner is usually in one of those fields. The ones that last, I guess.
And just thinking of the female police officers I've worked with and knew, most of them were married to cops.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
So, again, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I think that's the reality right now.
Right.
And I will say I think it's important that we get past that and start to break down that stereotype that the male has to be the dominant guy.
Yeah.
Right? Because when I talk to you about what's bugging me a little later on, I'm going to tell you a story about a dominant female in my life.
And
I think you'll appreciate it.
So the question also
was... That's not what's bugging me, but
it's part of the story. I understand. I get it. What advice would you give her? Well, it's tough for me as a guy to give advice to someone who wants to be a police officer who is a woman. It would probably best come from a female police officer. But just on the outside looking in, if I do give my two cents, I would say just understand that, you know, don't front. Be who you are.
Don't overcompensate.
Yeah, don't talk shit to be more than you are. Be who you are, okay? And understand also that there are going to be maybe some disadvantages if if you are a woman that's 120 pounds and you have to take a guy into custody who is 250 pounds,
I would have
difficulty with it. So you're probably going to have even more difficulty.
You're going to need to use your tools. You're going to need to use your baton, your taser, correct. your
You can now, I'm talking use of force situation. Right. If you, the female officer may be far superior at talking the guy into handcuffs, you know. So you're going to have to understand that as well. Your communication skills are going to have to be top notch. So,
and don't get caught up with the jerks in the profession. There's going to be male police officers, there just are. Like I'm sure there are male teachers, male attorneys, male doctors who are going to look down on females mm-hmm. or who are going to make comments about females that they shouldn't make, right. whether it's intentional or not.
Right.
There could just be some unintentional comments.
Yeah.
And if you're a female, I would say communicate that, mm-hmm. you know, speak with those officers and tell them I didn't appreciate that and here's yep. why. Or, you know, look for your support services, because there are lots of support services available for all police officers. You know, there's yep. there's support groups. There's so if you're feeling a little alienated, like you just said, don't let that chew you up and, you know, beat away at you mentally.
Yeah.
Because that's, you're going to get burned out very quickly.
Yeah. You know? And if you are a, let's say you're a new police officer, female, and there are some guys making negative comments, my recommendation is to try to deal with it with them first
right.
before you resort to going to a supervisor or some other resource, because you're probably going to get more respect from other officers that know that you're doing it, that you're going to stand your ground, and that's going to go a long way. And I'm not going to say it's not going to be easy for you. I don't think it's definitely going to be an uphill battle, but it has been done. And there are many very, very good women police officers out there. And maybe one day we'll bring one on the show
yeah.
to kind of talk about this.
Yep. And we need good cops, whether they are male, female,
whatever,
regardless of gender, race, sexual orientation,
exactly.
whether, you know, ethnicity. We need good cops.
Yep.
That's what we need.
That's
the key.
We need good cops.
Yep. Yep. So number four. This is a good one. What is the strangest or funniest thing you've seen during your time as a police officer?
That's like daily.
Go ahead, Tim. Come on. Give me a good one.
There's just too many to count. I had a deer run into my car one time. I mean, literally inside the car. I had to pull it out. I was reminded of Tommy Boy.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yep. One of the funniest things, I think I laughed so hard at this, was me and this other patrolman, we had to go arrest this little girl. I say little girl because she was tiny. I think she was in mid-20s.
She was an adult. Okay.
Yeah, I think she was in her mid-20s.
Yep. Young lady.
Young lady, yeah. And it was in the middle of winter in New Hampshire, and her mom said, well, she's upstairs in her room. Well, she must have heard us come in, because we went up there. The window was open, and she wasn't there. And this girl jumped out of a second-story colonial, and the hunt was on for her. You know, so we're looking around, and it was kind of a farmhouse, and it was a little barn shed type thing, and my partner found her, and all I could hear, I got her, and this is at night, and all I could see was his flashlight going up and down, because he's mm-hmm. running, right, so I'm just kind of tracking that, and there was a sergeant there as well, who kind of had an angle on her, and all I saw was him coming in, and them colliding. And the sergeant was probably a good 200 pounds. And I guess she was maybe 100 pounds soaking wet. And the funniest thing was they collided. And she went down and just kind of rolled and got right back on her feet and was gone again. He rolled down this ravine.
So this was not an intentional collision. They just bumped.
I don't know if he didn't see her. I don't know, because he was so embarrassed. He didn't want to talk about it after. He was so mad, too. But all I could see was my sergeant rolling down this hill. It's like in a cartoon, you know. And I'm just laughing my ass off at this whole thing. So.
Instead of helping him, you were laughing.
Oh, yeah. Well, the poor girl ended up, she fell down this hole that had a bunch of chunks of cement in it, because she didn't have the luxury of a flashlight, and she ended up going to the hospital. So it did not end well for her that night either. You know, again, if you didn't run, none of this would have happened.
Right, right.
You know?
Stay in your nice, nice room, nice comfortable bedroom.
Me and my partner, every time we see each other, hey, remember that time so-and-so rolled down the hill? Yeah. So That's one of mine.
Yep. I work in a beach community, or I've worked quite a bit of my career, and I can remember one 4th of July, we got called down because there was some drinking going on at the beach, which is very common, and what was reported as some inappropriate behavior. So I got there, and there was a group of young people in their 20s. They were from out of state. They were on vacation, and there was probably 3 or 4 young men sitting in lawn chairs. They had a pyramid of beer cans stacked up next to them. They must have drank, between this group, they had to have drank 100 beers.
Okay.
I mean, it was just...
Good night.
Yeah, it was great. Well, no, this is like 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, okay? Sorry, okay.
No, the beach is packed. There's parents and kids everywhere. And there were 2 young women that were with them, again in their 20s, in bikinis. One of them had an American flag bikini on, 4th of July.
Patriotic.
Basically conducting exotic dancing on these guys as they were sitting in their lawn chairs.
Okay.
And right. So I've got to approach this very, tactfully, because in all seriousness, I don't want to create a scene either. You got, any more than has already been created. So I go down and I use some discretion. They got to clean everything up, pack up. It's time to go. You're not staying here.
Kicking them off the beach.
Yeah, I'm basically saying you're not getting arrested. I mean, I can arrest you for a number of things here. They're all intoxicated. They've got open containers on the beach. They're littering. I mean, there's a million things they can be cited for. And I can take them into custody because they're all pretty intoxicated. They had a friend there that was sober. Get them in the vehicle. Go back to the house you're renting. This is a family beach. This is not the place for that. So as they're all leaving, I'm coming up off the beach, and there's a guy, probably, middle-aged guy, sitting there on the sidewalk, the wall by the beach, and he looks at me. He's furious. His kids are, like, eating ice cream, and he looks at me, and he says, "Hey, man, what are you doing? Like, why are you throwing them off the beach? I'm watching the girls dance."
He was enjoying the show.
He's furious at me. He just looks at me. He's completely disgusted with me for throwing these people off the beach. Or not throwing, but, suggesting to them they need to leave to avoid getting arrested.
Yeah.
And he just looks at me and he goes, "Hey, man, what are you doing?" I started laughing out loud at this, saying all these other people are complaining, and understandably so.
Right.
And then there's this guy with his 2 kids eating ice cream. I don't know where his wife was. She must have maybe been in the bathhouse or the restroom or something.
Right.
And he's just furious at us.
What the heck, man?
Right.
This is my show.
Right. And so, there's been a lot of those kind of incidents.
And how about pranksters? You got some real pranksters at your agency?
Yes, we do. There have been some really, really good pranks that have been played over the years. A few of them that probably went a little too far, to be honest with you, that we kind of looked at. Fortunately, I wasn't involved in any of those. But I always tell the story of the guy that he found a picture of me, and he shrunk it down, and then he attached it to the backup camera on one of the cruisers, and then sat there and watched the midnight shift, put their car in reverse, and then it looked like I was standing behind the car with it. It was a picture of me, and I was, I think my mouth was open, and I was standing kind of in a very aggressive position. And so watching these guys put the car in reverse and then quickly hit the brakes and put it in and then get out of the car and look for me. They can't find me because it's just a little picture attached to the backup camera.
Wow.
Me neither, but It's Lucas's generation. They figure this stuff out. Yes. There was another officer that would get off the evening shift, I guess, and hide in the back seat of a police car. And then as the midnight shift was driving down the street, he would jump up behind him and yell, "Woogie, boogie, boogie," from the back seat.
Yeah,
he's lucky somebody didn't shoot him.
Like that. Yeah.
He's lucky he didn't get killed.
Those. Yeah. One of my good friends, he was an extreme prankster. I mean, he would go to great lengths. And one time there was one officer who was having a new house built nearby, and this was on the midnight shift. I wasn't there, but of course the story got around pretty quickly. And they would go and each night and check the progress of the construction. Mm-hmm. And as the house neared completion, this one guy went and got a dummy and a sleeping bag and put it in there and put beer cans all over the place and trash inside. And Of course, they're walking up the stairs and they see the beer cans, and then the guy they were playing the prank on, he's a little bit of a hothead anyway.
Yep.
And he did exactly as this guy planned. He went nuts.
Started screaming at the dummy.
Oh, yeah, get your hands up, you know, all of this. And so I would love to have been there. I'm sure they were pissing their pants laughing. All right, so that's it for the questions. We'll get to some more later on. So now we're going to move on to what's bugging Josh.
Yes. Yeah.
What's grinding your gears, my man?
Well, so this has been something that, as you guys know, has been bothering me for a while, and that is school buses.
School buses.
Now, I've mentioned it on other episodes. I see Lucas's face. Are you aware of this, Lucas? How much school buses drive me crazy?
Yeah, I know you mentioned it on a previous.
Yeah. And I'm not against school buses. Obviously, they're important. Kids got to go to school. First of all, I don't see any kids on school buses anymore. I look at one and there's like three kids on them. Nobody rides the bus anymore.
Yeah.
Okay? I rode the bus as a kid all the time. And it was important. It was important for social development. Okay? It was important to deal with other kids. I mentioned alpha dog females. I got the crap kicked out of me by a young lady on the school bus one time at 10 years old, and I learned very early on what not to say to a young lady.
I've seen many fights on school buses.
Yeah, but
many.
This young lady was like Peppermint Patty from the Peanuts. You know,
gotcha.
She was a tough kid. She was an athlete. She had on I remember this. This is over 30 years ago. She had on Holly Hobby boots. Like cowboy boots.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you think I know what those boots were?
Is that what you picked on, or is that what she kicked your butt with?
That is what, and it wasn't my butt that she kicked with those boots, which is how it all started. Okay. And that, from that moment on, I was in trouble. Okay. So getting on the school bus has value for young people. Then the other part, and this is what really drives me crazy, is that they stop at every house now. There's no more school. There's no more bus stops. It drives me nuts.
Right. So every 10 feet, they're stopping.
Right. I get behind a school bus, and I'm on my way to work. I forget it. I turn around. I go home. You're never getting there. Okay?
I've done that before. I've pulled over on the side of the road and, like, checked the emails.
Just relax, because it's going to be an hour. So this came to a head recently, a few months ago. I was driving behind a school bus. We had stopped 12 times in, like, a quarter of a mile. Okay, there was the day I called you.
Yes, while I can tell you, I got a play-by-play of this.
Yeah. And they got to a point, there were two kids and their driveways. The driveways were next to each other. They were throwing a football back, and they were only 10 yards away. The first kid threw a football to his buddy. His buddy caught it, and he got on the bus. The other kid didn't walk the 7 steps to get on. It stopped twice. It stopped for the first kid who threw the football. The other one caught it, and then it drove 10 feet, whatever.
No.
I yelled in my car, and I'm embarrassed to say it, but I yelled, "You lazy little bastard." Okay? I couldn't believe it. This kid could have walked 2 or 3 steps and got on the bus with his friend. I was shocked. That's when I said, that's it. I can't deal with this anymore. I'm checking out. School bus is good for kids. Ride the school bus. Bus stop is good for kids. Go to the bus stop.
Go to the bus stop.
Right.
Everybody's gone soft.
Yeah. That's what used to happen at the bus stop, Tim? When I was a kid.
Well, I didn't.
You hit each other with your backpacks. That's what you did. You
beat each other up with your backpacks. I grew up very rural where I grew up, so it was just me. And then it would be miles before the next kid got picked up. That's where I grew up. The army of one.
That was
exactly. So I would hit myself with a backpack, I guess.
But that's what we did. And you hit each other, you hit your friends, you beat each other up, all playfully. But that was what we did. And everybody joked and teased each other and so on and so forth. Now, every kid sits at the end of their driveway, and that's the end of it. You know?
And they stop at every driveway.
And I did have that at one time in my life where I was going to school, we didn't have a school bus stop, so I had to wait in my driveway. But it wasn't the next driveway over, they stopped again. It was like 2 streets over, they picked up another kid,
and
so on and so forth.
The school bus used to stop right here for all the neighborhood kids.
Right.
Yeah. And when Lucas was in middle school, and my daughter, they had to walk from the end of the street all the way home.
Yeah, now again, I'm not suggesting that kids should be put in danger.
No, to, I to think that's good for them.
No, no, I mean on a busy street, dangerous street, so on and so forth. Street, yeah. Right. But, you know, if you got a sidewalk and a bus stop, use the bus stop. And it will save me a lot of aggravation, and I won't have to call Tim on the phone. I know. And he can hear me screaming into the Bluetooth.
I had to be his therapist that day and talk him off the edge. Oh, my God.
I'm just going out of my mind. Sorry.
All right.
I'm getting off topic here.
Good. Let's close this out, man. So, we kind of talked about being in shape. Why not get your ass out there and run? Okay? Right?
Yeah.
Running's good. And the fruits of your running, you know, like the reward could be that you enter a 5K race, sure. Right?
Yes.
I got one for you, all right? If you are in the New England area, how about the Foot Race for the Fallen 5K in Manchester, New Hampshire? We are the proud sponsors of this this race. Very happy with that. As a matter of fact, I got a thank you card right here in front of me from the Manchester Police Athletic League. And if you do sign up for this race, if you use the promo code GSPCC2019, again, that's GSPCC2019, you get $5 off the registration. So there you go. I saved you $5, and I'm giving you incentive to get off your ass and start running.
Right? Fall of 2019.
It's in the fall, yeah. I've actually run this one a couple of times, and my wife, her very first 5K was this very one. And it was a beautiful day that day. Oh, and I will say there's a huge beer tent at the end. So,
and you'll get to meet us. We'll be there.
Yeah, we're going to be there. We're going to be there. Maybe even do a podcast.
Yep.
Who knows?
You can come over to the GSPCC table and hang out with us.
Yep. Come and meet us. You know, we're celebrities.
Right? That's worth the $5 right there. I'll be honest with you.
All right. Really quick. If you know someone who's looking to get into law enforcement, I highly recommend that you buy our book called Law Enforcement Test Preparation Guide. You can find it on our website, which is gs-pcc.com. You can also find it on Amazon. It is a kind of a A to Z, very nuts and bolts, pragmatic approach to preparing for a law enforcement test process, from the application to the background investigation. It's chock full of information. Please follow us and subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, or Alexa. If you are out there on the social media realm, we can be found on Twitter at GSPCC1. We're on Facebook, which is facebook.com/GSPCC1. Instagram, we are at GSPCC. And we do put out a monthly newsletter. If you want to sign up for that, all you have to do is go to our website, which is gs-pcc.com, and up in the right-hand corner, you can click on the icon, and it takes you right to where you can sign up. Our monthly newsletter is chock full of information about nutrition, health, what's going on in law enforcement, and maybe promoting some other things as well. And occasionally, Josh and I will write an article about something. So that's about it. Got anything, my man?
Nope, that's it.
How about you over there, Lucas?
Nope, nothing for me.
All right, my man. So Lucas is a musician, creates music. Where can they find your music?
You can find some of my instrumentals at airbit.com/LJProduction. That's AIRBIT.com. And you can find my music on Apple Music, Spotify, Google Play. Just type in my full name, Lucas Jones. You'll find my stuff.
There you go. Yeah. Very entertaining. Josh even likes his music.
Yeah, it is great.
Yeah. Yep. All right, everyone, please be safe. And next week, we don't have that one planned out yet. So a little bit ahead of myself there.
Yeah.
All right.
One step at a time, too.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Anyway, take care, everyone. Please be safe.